So I designed the pavilion initially just a concept, university project. I wanted to build it, for real, rather than just a dissertation and then get a mark and then get a job after that.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of Cut Talk. My name is Jörg Lantsch, and in this podcast, we are talking about computer-aided design, from software to hardware, from actual technology to future trends. My today's guest is Chun-King Lee. I hope I pronounce this right. Founder of Create. And he gave a talk, I think it was already a few years ago, I've seen on the internet, and he stated that we need to build New York City every few days or so. So there's a huge demand in housing, living space worldwide. So I hope that will be very interesting today. Hello, Lee. Welcome to our podcast.
Good morning, York. How are you doing?
I'm excellent. So you've started your own business with Creod after finishing university. Tell us a little bit about, let's say, motivation and goals. Well, how come?
Well, yes. It all started with a curiosity. When I was first year student, I had a job offer from my teacher. He's still running his practice in Liverpool. And I was a bit surprised when I was, in the real practice, in the real world, the buildings he was designing, they just, to be honest, not very pretty. In a way, it's quite ugly. And I just raised a question, because the way he was teaching us, so romantic, all these beautiful visions, ideas, but in the real practice, seems just copy-paste things, just quite boring. So my question was, do you need 7 years of education to come up something like this, apartment building, housing, or offices? And I said, well, Lee, that's why I'm teaching, because, the education keeps me young, the ideas, generating new ideas. That's the main reason I'm teaching, not for money, just, And yeah, that was the first thought, the curiosity. If we spend 7 years doing this architecture studies, you come up with, something that doesn't really require a designer. You don't need a design degree to come up a building like that. So there must be a better way. He said, Lee, you can't, because, the client, it all boils down to the cost. When you design something nice and the client's quantity surveyor always say, this is too expensive, simplify it. And this is where we're at, there's nothing we can do. And then that was the kind of initial motivation, there must be a way. And I wanted to start my own practice, hopefully one day, and design something beautiful, but sustainable, but more importantly, financially viable. That's how I started. Yeah.
And you mentioned in the talk we had earlier that in history, until sometimes the Renaissance or so, yes, there was the master builder, and he was, yes, the designer and the construction,
everything
in one person, yeah, and that, yeah, separated at some time, point in time.
I think during the Renaissance, wasn't it? The traditional meaning, architecting in the mid 16th century meant chief builder or master builder. So the architect's role wasn't just the master of spatial effects, but they were also closely involved in the engineering, manufacturing and construction processes. But it was shifted during the Renaissance. I mean, the designers, the architects want to do something more, glamorous, artistic. And the builders are just, the guy do the heavy lifting, playing mud on building sites. So that's that was a split. So yes, I think this is an interesting moment. I mean, even the recent history, not a long time ago, say 57 post-war, architects used to be the leader of the entire process, but they failed. And now if you look at the industry, architecture is part of the team to get a design concept, a vision, and get the planning done. And then following that to deliver the drawing packages for pricing and the construction purposes. So this is a major shift, I think, so that's one of the reasons why we started the software and development, is trying to, how do we regain this kind of the medieval power architect and the master builder, be the digital master builder or and the physical master builders as well. So that's my vision actually.
And you had, I think it was still at university, you had this one project of this pavilion for the Olympics in London.
Yeah. So yeah, it was a burning desire. I just couldn't accept doing something, you know, finish my university, doing some boring stuff. And I worked for Foster Partners in 2007. And I discovered the software called the Bentley Generative Components. And Foster Partners, KPF, they in partnership developed this application. And they've used this software developed, you know, delivered quite significant projects, you know, landmark buildings and in the competition design and leading towards, you know, the digital fabrication. So that's how I started this, yeah, the process.
And you told me that one of the main questions was, what I've designed or I had an idea, can this be built?
Well, that was that was a thing. So following the work experience of Foster Partners, I went back to university for my part two, you know, the in the UK called degree and the diploma, master degree. And in my part two, I started this the dissertation called I invented my own topic. There were 50 topics and invented my own. It was called, computational design and digital fabrication, which I believed it was going to be the big thing in the near future. So yeah, so I designed the pavilion initially just a concept, university project. I wanted to build it, you know, see, for real, rather than just, a dissertation and then get a mark and then, and then get a job after that. So I started this. It was just a concept. And when I present this idea to my friends and teachers, and they were very encouraging. I said that it's impossible. I said, thank you. I mean, to be honest, you know, they were right, because, you know, the challenge I had wasn't just the solve the design problems, but more importantly, you know, to raise the finance. So the question arised, who's the client? You know, who's the contractor? Where do we build it? You know, all those questions I couldn't answer. But I thought, yeah, it was in the middle of recession. I had a job as well, you know, luckily. I got a job in 2010 as soon as I finished university. But during my kind of postgraduate work experience, I started pitching, you know, this idea. So we were trying to build a pavilion during the London Olympics. So I was just did the research after work. You know, the architectural practice, it finished quite late. So after that, I just, you know, went home and have some food and, you know, energy drinks, loads of coffee, and started, you know, doing research at companies and, it's, you know, writing letters to organizations. So after thousands of rejections and failures, I managed to convince quite big companies like Hewlett-Packard, Bentley Systems, and the Rambles engineering, they sponsor the, you know, the engineering service, you know, services, and the Eco Timber from Cabinet, et cetera. So yeah, and I took this role as the client, as a principal contractor, you know, project management, apart from structural engineering, I did everything else, you know. So yeah, it was a very stressful experience, considering I've never built anything in my life. That was too, in a way, it was too much and too stressful, but we did it, you know, with a lot of team of volunteers, very nice people, and we made it happen for the London Olympics. Yeah, that was a significant achievement. Yeah.
Okay, let's turn the topic a little bit to software. You already mentioned Bentley Systems and your experience you had. You told me before that this huge CAD systems for designing aerospace, automotive industries, they're, let's say, a bit overdone for architecture and AEC industries and too expensive.
And, yes.
but they have the advantage of that they have the capability of something like DFMA, Design for Manufacturing and Assembly.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about this then.
Yeah, I discovered that, you know, the CATIA, Dassault Systems, when I was doing my research, you know, as you may know, Frank Gehry, very famous American-Canadian architect, his signature projects such as, you know, Guggenheim, Disney Concert Hall, very complex structures, you know, and he was the man that he invested and developed his software on CATIA version 5 and later on version 6. I thought that was, this is great, so interesting, you know, because the project, his design projects were so, they're so complex, and they couldn't use these in a standard, you know, the AutoCAD or any software to deliver them. It's just and 2D drawings, just no, there's no way you can describe the design, the geometry, and the fabrication, everything. So I thought it was quite interesting. So yeah, I was quite lucky, you know, enrolled this, you know, the startup program under the Dassault system. So, and then started learning and using this CAD system, which is brilliant actually. And the challenge number one it's very different, you know, it's different to any software. I'm a very good, you know, computational design, parametric designer. And this is something else that, you know, and took me 6 months to get head around. And the first year just about doing something. And then realized that it's not viable because we don't have the talent pool, you see. If I need some help, I did get some consultants teaching our team and how to use this software. They were ex-Gary Technologies, GT. And obviously the business growing a little bit bigger. I realized that we couldn't scale because we couldn't find any architects who knows how to use CATIA. that was the challenge. So if something happens, say one of the guys leaves us for a better job or better pay job, whatever, you know, so we'll be in trouble. So I thought this is not going to be viable. Let's explore the alternative. Can we develop software on the top CATIA so that it can automate the process? You capture the knowledge and it can automate the process. So anyone can just do a reference modeling. That's quite easy to learn. And then following that, you just choose the product. You just click and it automates and generates the shop drawings or simply just manufacturing code we've done, you know, like a steel frame, you know, that drives the machine. So when you generate the framing, you design with an engineer, they say, you know, bracing or extra support members. And then once it's agreed, and that automates the shop drawings, which we don't need. And more importantly, the manufacturing code that drives the machine. So we can get quotations from the manufacturer directly rather than give the drawing package, you know, to a quantity surveyor and they can benchmark how much per square meter. You know, this, I think I never understand this process. But anyway, so in a way, it was the beginning was quite, it's quite unusual, you know, in the AEC industry, because usually in an architect scope, we just get a drawing package, whether you use BIM or 2D CAD drawings. The submission, the scope, the client's requirements, always 2D drawing package in PDF and then DWG. So now so this was quite challenging, you know. Some, you know, took some developers, you know, they don't understand it, but they understand the benefits. Quite few people, like especially contracts. Ultimately, you need a contractor as a developer. You need a contractor to deliver the project, but the contractors don't really understand the process. So that was the greatest challenge. And one interesting story was, I pitched a developer, and he loved it. I did a presentation, the PPT presentation. He said, "Wow, this is the future! Wow, this is amazing, man!" And at the end, he said, he paused for a few seconds. "Have you built anything with this technology yourself?" And I said, "No, I'm not a contractor. Well, I can't be your guinea pig." So that was the moment that it was a wake up call. I should start a construction company. Otherwise, we can never change this kind of dynamics, you know. So that's the brief story. We can explore a bit in a minute.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you really started to construct buildings, right?
Yes.
You had your own construction company.
Yeah. So this is it. Well, they obviously did some research. I spoke to my accountant, my wife, she's also an accountant. And they have the data that so many contracts that go bust. It's a brutal industry to enter. It's just not, you know, it's not something you want to do. But I didn't listen, actually. I need to, you know, in a way called lift the cart. If you don't do anything yourself, nobody will ever use your software or technology, you see. Nobody wants to be a guinea pig because this is a construction. It's not a consumer product, you see. If you buy a smartphone, you don't like it. You know, you don't like some iPhone and you don't like, and you just buy a Samsung, you know, it's easy. But building, you can't just say, "Oh, it didn't work. Let's change another technology or contract in the middle of the construction." You know, this is quite risky, you know, financially. So this is a kind of and then there's one quotation by, I was inspired by Buckminster Fuller's quotation. He said that you never change things by fighting the existing reality. To change something, build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete. So this is kind of, yeah, put lots of thoughts into that. You know, we have to build. That's the key. You know, all the things you see on the screen, you click and it's easy to use, so accurate, and it's beautiful stuff. But ultimately, people see, you know, most companies are risk reversal, you know. In reality, they say they're taking do this and do that, but ultimately they're very conservative, you know. Risk is a least thing they want to take. So it's a human nature, really, obviously. So, you know, there's another story called, have you ever heard this? There's a quote, nobody gets sacked for buying IBM.
Nope.
There's a, back in the days, IBM was the most reliable computers for organization enterprise. So, you know, if you're the IT director and you just say, oh, we want to use Hewlett Packard or Dell, not IBM, they're too expensive or whatever the reasons. If something goes wrong down the line, which will anyway, it's a technology, isn't it? And what's going to happen to you? If you're the IT director, something goes wrong and then suddenly got 200 people work in the office and the computer shut down, you couldn't work for 2 days or just 2 hours, you know, what's the impact to your business? So if we've got IBM, if your IBM can't deliver, nobody else can. So you pass the blame to someone else. But if you say, oh, we use Hewlett Packard, something goes wrong, and there'll be a question, who made the decision buying Hewlett Packard? Well, you'd be sacked. So this is the kind of thing, it's just, you know, the human habits, you know, which is a natural thing, you know, it's all about aligning yourself with something in a way sounds more reliable than others. So in the back, so there's a CAT system, is again, you just develop a software, you say you can do this and do that, but ultimately they're not liable, they're software developers, you know. The contractors take the full responsibility. If that fails, so that's very tricky, isn't it? But now this is a chicken egg issues, you know. So if you have the developer who develops software and you haven't built anything yourself, you're not, you know, who's going to use it? It's very difficult. It's a big barrier from 0 to 1, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the tough decision I had to make, you know, made a very bold move. Let's start a construction company. We have a project here. Let me convince the client, the developer clients. So I did the DFMA package, you know, design for manufacturing assembly package, as well as the traditional 2D drawings we extracted from 3D. And I convinced the clients that I can build this for you. And this is an open book contract. This is how much it actually cost you.
Mm.
And yeah, I convinced, that's how we started this. Yeah. We are our own guinea pig. No. So yeah.
And you're still there, so that's,
yeah, still there.
Let's
still
say
there.
It's in a way successful after a few years. And now you're starting with a new software, and the statement you gave is that it will change
intelligently revolutionizing the business model
of the business AEC model, yeah, of AEC.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a big statement.
It's not just the software, really. When I've been doing this in construction, it's this small, you know, projects we've been building. But when I started the construction business, I realized there's a huge gap between AE, architecture engineering. It's like husband and wife, you know, they're doing things, butterflies flapping around, you know, get things done, you know, good stuff. But the construction is over the Mars. It's a very different, it's a different thing, you know, in terms of people have a different value, different mindset, different business model, different ideologies. It's completely different. So this is a kind of, I realized, wow, there's a huge gap and there's so much waste, so unsustainable, this process, you know. I can explain a bit more in a minute. So I mean, how do we bridge the gap between the AE and this alien C? So this is a kind of, that's our software actually is a building around it, understanding the, you know, been talking to different contractors and also subcontractors and the manufacturers, understand their procurement process, which is completely, it's just so naive. For example, say there's a one project the client approached us. He told a story. I have this project, it's £10 million and plus contingency, all that stuff, you know, material fluctuations. So over the next 3 years, it's going to cost me 13.2 million pounds. I've been doing this for three decades. I know everything. It's a 13.2 million. And the bank's willing to give me 14 million pounds to do this. And I can make a profit out of that. But why would the people give this job when they procurement, you know? Why would there's a developer to point to a contractor who priced for 8.1 million? It's a 4 million pounds, 4 or 5 million pounds difference. How is that viable? Do you see what I mean? So that's the thing. This process is you let people in, and then obviously everybody knows it's not viable. Don't think it can start issuing, you know, the contracts. They usually issue the design change or variation order, we call them variation order, extension time, trying to get their money back so they can reach to the point in 3 years' time. Ultimately, they charge 13.8 million or 14.2, things like that, you know. But the client said to me, that's raising a very good point. I know how much it costs me, right? So I don't want to have this contract on board contact me every second day asking for more money, because my time and our time is so expensive. Because when they issue a variation order, obviously meaning they want to charge more money, I've got a team of quantity surveyors need to engage in my department to engage like two people and plus me and the other, you know, to understand what's the cost, what's going up exactly, interrogate and negotiate, you see. It's very time intense, you know, it's very intense, you know, the timing wise, and also the cost so much money. They want to free themselves. You know, I want something certainty. I want certainty now after the pandemic. Everybody's looking for certainty. The age of competitive tender, I think, is sort of dying because people, there's nothing certain. So this is a kind of, we're kind of bridging the gap between this, so many, you know, like between the AE, the developer, and the AEC industries, kind of, you know, when we're generating this, you know, the technology developed initially on the Dassault system, CONTIA, now we're on the Creo X software, which is due to launch in October. It's a kind of, how do we streamline the process and make it more transparent, more efficient, and more certainty. So this is why we're using the slogan rather than just the CAT system. You know, if you do 10 clicks on Revit and one click on Creo X, that's not the point.
So your software will launch this month in October. You mentioned this.
Oh, October, yes.
And you're bridging the gap. Does it also mean that you're speeding up projects from idea to really construction? Will it be faster?
It will be faster. That's the bottom line. Definitely it will be efficient, but the process is slightly different to the you know, that we use BIM, building information modeling. And you know, when you do BIM, you know, the architect engineer, they do this 3D BIM modeling, and there's a form of intelligence. You can extract some, if you make some changes, certain things will update. And some scheduling is quite good. But the thing is, if you think logically, if you beam everything up and you end up issuing 2D drawing packages for construction procurement and then construction after that, to me, it's one step forward, two steps back, isn't it? Because you have the BIM and the construction industry, they just need the 2D drawings. That's how they work. Give me the specification, give me the drawing package, and they'll come up with some numbers. What's the point of all this? What's the game changing? It's definitely, I mean, the BIM is definitely more efficient than the 2D CAD drawings for sure, because, you know, but it's not game changing in my opinion, is it? You still get the 2D drawings ultimately. That's what the industry do. So there's a kind of so many multiple faceted kind of things needs to change within the industry. I think the contractors is the most powerful role in this entire process, you know, because they are taking the full responsibility on the delivery side. So they need to pick up some changes. I've spoken to so many tier one contractors. They say, you know, there's a huge, they spend a lot of money actually, you know, take a digitization and then some, you know, beef up their knowledge and you know, integrate everything, you know, collaboration, integration, using BIM. But the reality is the methodology they use, the outdated methodology. they want to change, but at the same time, there's a project running. They're on the firefighting mode, you see, surviving mode. They don't have the time. You think about that. It's true, actually. They don't have the time to kind of testing things, you know, because this is something needs to be done now. And design needs to be changed. And then, because your larger project, like Tier 1, the hospital, they've got 2,000 people on site. Any delays, people not doing much is for a day. How much would that cost you? Just on the labor costs.
Yep.
So this is something, you know, we kind of building a software, piece of software, kind of that fits, trying to find out, you know, we're building stuff that ticks a very big box. You know, when I pitch to the contractors now, previously we're just, you click this and does that. It models everything and then it can do the fabrication. They said, yeah, it's a great, good idea. That's what good feedback, but nobody wants to use it. But now the conversation different. This is a project. You see the same, as you said, the same thing, the click doing this and that, you know, DFMA, the new workflow. But I built this, I built that. So suddenly the conversations, the dynamic of the conversation different. People think you're not talking rubbish here. You know the business. So the reason I use the word business, because it is a business at the end of the day. Mm. And the software is just a tool.
Yeah, of course.
So
that was very interesting. Probably you can mention the website again for your new product. It's creodx.com, right?
Yeah. KREODX.com. Yeah, it's due to launch in October this year.
So goes out to all our audience. Have a look at it and probably you can register or something that you get notified when it's available. And that was very interesting. And keep my fingers crossed that you will be able to change the business model in construction.
Hope so.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay. That's it for today. I hope this episode was interesting for you. If you have any feedback, just drop me a line at info@cutdoc.de. And don't forget to click subscribe button to our podcast, then you don't miss any future episodes. For today, I say goodbye and talk to you in 4 weeks' time. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thank you.